to Voice of Minnesota. I am Hunter Haas here with Eric Nelson, filling in for Doug Padgett today for local Minnesota Radio Hour. And we have two extremely special guests today. We will be speaking with Dean Phillips, candidate for CD3 for Congress, in just 1 minute. And then later in the show, we'll be speaking with Matt Chrisman of Chapo Trap House, the podcast, who they have just written a new book called The Chapo Guide to Revolution, a manifesto against logic, facts, and reason. And Eric, you brought your copy in today. The book looks cool. Have you read it at all yet?
I just got it last night. I've been kind of browsing through it, and it looks, pretty good, but I haven't got a chance to really read it.
Yeah, phenomenal podcast. We're both big fans of it, and the book does look really cool. I got it here if you're looking at the Facebook Live, but we'll be speaking with Matt later in the show. But first up, we have candidate for Congressional District 3, which I live in, Dean Phillips, who's running against, Eric Paulson. Dean, are you there?
I'm here. Good to be with you, Hunter.
Yeah, great to have you on. So why don't you first tell me, why did you get into this race specifically? What motivated you? What inspired you to run against Paulson?
Well, it's a responsibility, Hunter. I watched the 2016 election with great dismay, and the night of the election, I was with my family and really watched through the lens of my daughters, who at that time were 18 and 16, and saw their fear and their anxiety and their tears. And I woke up the next morning, and at the breakfast table, I promised them that I would do something. And that doing something has become this run for Congress. And I immediately turned my attention to Eric Paulson after that promise to them. And a man who, his votes don't match his quotes, who talks like Jim Ramstad but votes like Michelle Bachmann. And Hunter, I've long thought that the Constitution anticipated a president like Donald Trump, but it did not anticipate a Congress filled with so many who are bought and sold and who lack courage. And I'm afraid Congressman Paulson is the poster child for that lack of courage. And we need a check on the executive branch now more than ever. And serving this country and trying to be one of 23 Democrats who flipped the House became my mission. And I've got to tell you, it's the most joyful journey on which I've ever been.
Now, I remember early on in your campaign, you had done where you set up ice houses across lakes where people were ice fishing, and you had conversations in there. And now I know you have your vehicle that you have coffee and conversations. Why don't you tell me about some of the experiences you've had with those?
Sure, Hunter. One of the great joys of campaigning is conversations with people, and that is the ethos of my campaign. In fact, our slogan is "Everyone's Invited." And I want to come meet people where they are, and that's why we had the ice shack on the lake, and I've got my 1960 government repair truck that I drive around the district and serve coffee and lemonade and have conversations with people. We've got a pontoon boat now, and I just came from the state fair where we have a wonderful booth and spent hours with fairgoers from the 3rd District and having great conversations. And I do so not just with Democrats. I do so with anybody who is willing to share a conversation, have some dialogue about the issues important to them, and that's what my campaign's about. It's about bringing people back to the table, sharing perspectives. We may not always agree, but we should at least agree to talk, and that's what makes this such a wonderful pursuit.
Why don't you tell our listeners where they can find your booth at the fair? What's it nearby in the fair?
Sure. So our booth is actually right around the corner from the DFL booth. We're on Cooper, right before the corner of Wright Street, or Wright Avenue, I should say. And I think we're the only booth from any congressional campaign or elected in the entire state. So we're easy to find, and I'll be there quite a bit over the next week or so, and can't wait to have conversations with whoever happens to be around.
Now, a positive memory I have from months ago, earlier on in the campaign, before the CD3 DFL convention, was you were running against Adam Jennings for the endorsement, and I remember after you received the endorsement that Adam Jennings became one of your most vocal supporters and got behind you and was appearing at public events wearing your T-shirt and that, and I thought that really looked well on both of you, one, that he was willing to become such a vocal supporter and that he would want to get behind you after you guys having been campaigning against each other.
That's And that's what it's a hallmark of all of us who ran for that endorsement. We are all on the same team. Adam has been wonderful. Everybody else who ran has been equally wonderful. And we recognize that if we're going to accomplish what hasn't been done since 1958, the last time a Democrat won the seat here in the 3rd District, that it's going to take all of us working together. And I've been thrilled with that support. And you know, now our responsibility is to expand that amongst independents and ensure that Democrats get out and vote, and also extend invitations to moderate Republicans who increasingly recognize the need to assess alternatives, and those who are fiscally responsible but socially inclusive and independent-minded. You know, it's a wonderful opportunity to come back together and inspire the change that I know we need.
Now, I'm a part of Indivisible Chaska, and I know that for a long time, our Indivisible groups have been banding together in replacing Eric Paulson, and they have gotten behind your campaign very enthusiastically. Why don't you talk about your experiences with Indivisible?
Well, I celebrate everybody who is participating in the Indivisible movement. It has paved the path to opening the doors of activism to many people who have never been engaged before. And it's a hallmark of these times. And I think the reason that change is coming, people who have taken our circumstances for granted, I have recognized that we all have a responsibility to participate. And I'm just one of those people, one of millions around the country who has said that we have got to do something. And my participation is a run for Congress, but every single person who is doing something to affect change is playing a role in making it happen. And Indivisible has been an extraordinary organization to pave that path. And of course, as you know, it's not just Democrats. It's independents and thoughtful Republicans and others who recognize that this administration, the lack of character in the White House, and the lack of a Congress with any courage is something that we have got to address and have to do so together. So I welcome those endorsements from Indivisible, and also celebrate everybody who's playing a role in getting this wonderful work done.
We're speaking with Dean Phillips, the DFL-endorsed candidate for Congress for Congressional District 3. Now, Dean, you have kind of a specific health care plan. Why don't you go into that and explain it a bit and go into some of the specifics?
Sure. Well, I believe that it's time that our country makes the moral decision to ensure that everybody has health care when they need it, no matter one's age or income or geography or condition. Those are the principles and values that most of the people with whom I talk share. And I talk to too many people, Hunter, who are an illness away from bankruptcy, who can barely afford their insurance premiums, who pay thousands of dollars a month for either medication or for care for a loved one. And that's just that is incongruent with the principles and values of the people that I speak with. And so the first thing I will do, should I have the honor of serving in Congress, is to immediately address the gaps in the ACA, ensure that our insurance markets are stable with reinsurance, and ensure that this plan and program works as well as it possibly can. That's a beginning. And then I'm a proponent of expanding Medicare as a buy-in option for everybody in this country. I'm a small business owner, and I know, like any small business owner, how difficult the current insurance environment is. And imagine a plan like Medicare that is easy to understand, available to everybody, affordable, and especially for people who are now buying on the individual market, would have as an alternative to private or nonprofit insurance plans. It would strengthen Medicare because people are buying into it. And if Medicare becomes stronger, the leverage to now negotiate pharmaceutical pricing would save tens of billions of dollars a year for all taxpayers in this country. And eventually, we have to turn our attention to the care delivery model. So my plan dictates and mandates that we change our incentive system to go away from rewarding procedures and hospitalizations and instead make investments in keeping people healthy, so invest in prevention. Once we make that change, we will lower the cost of care in this country. We will make care available to everybody and do so in a manner that I think both sides of the aisle could actually get behind. And I'm a proponent of a notion called Medicare Extra that has been introduced by the Center for American Progress. I think that's the most sensible and most importantly, achievable ways to ensure that everybody in this country has health care when they need it, and that we're not the only developed nation in the entire world that hasn't made the decision to do so.
Now, if elected, what would be your first plan of action when you got into Congress?
Well, my first, I believe, as you might know, Hunter, that, that campaign finance reform is the hallmark of my candidacy. And I say so because I believe it is foundational to address if we hope to achieve anything that's important to us. And when I say us, I mean everybody. Any issue that may be your number one, I hope that number two becomes campaign finance reform, because the money in politics is creating dysfunction, discord, and the inability to get things done. And that's why I want to start with that. I want to expose the truth, which is a very unfortunate and very corrupting truth about how this system operates. And I want to elevate ideas and solutions so that we can return power to people. And right now, special interests own too many members of Congress. Eric Paulson has been bought and sold. He's the sixth largest taker of PAC super special interest money in the entire U.S. Congress of 435 people. And you cannot make principled, independent decisions on behalf of your constituents when you are the recipient of so much money from interests that are doing everything they can to ensure that the status quo exists, even though we want change. So that would be my first priority, because if we can change that, then we can start taking on the tasks that are in front of us relative to healthcare and education and the environment and human rights. The issues that right now are just caught in the dysfunction of a Congress that is not getting its work done. And I intend to be the biggest advocate for change and the most vocal member of Congress for removing the influence of affluence.
I love that answer, and you're totally walking the walk on that stance. Why don't you talk about how you've raised money for your campaign?
I am, Hunter, and I thank you for bringing that up. I'm the only candidate that we're aware of in the entire country that refuses all PAC money, all special interest money, all money from federal lobbyists, and all money from current members of Congress, because they also use money to influence votes, whether it be for leadership positions or legislation. And I think we need to migrate to a system that creates a level playing field for any candidate and, frankly, inspires candidates to participate. So too many people who have great ideas and wonderful aspirations forego runs for public office because they realize the money is so suffocating. And I want to run the most principled campaign that this nation has known in many, many years. And if the 3rd District embraces that and sends me to Congress to represent it, I believe we can start affecting change, and this one voice can become a chorus. And that's why the support of 54,000 people so far, individuals, have made this possible, because I'm still powering up the campaign only with people. And my contribution has been $5,400 and the use of my office and campaign truck and my pontoon boat. And I think we can do this better, and that's why I've challenged Eric Paulson to run our race in the Minnesota way, which would get rid of all the PAC and special interest money, all self-funding, and also remove the outside spending, which will probably be over $20 million alone spent in our race in just the coming 80 days or so. And we have got to do better, and I'm walking the talk, and encourage anybody who might be interested to come along. We've got a lot of room on this bus.
Now, why don't you tell people how they can get involved? Our station is located in CD3, and our signal reaches almost the entirety of CD3, so I'm sure there's a lot of people that would love to be involved with your campaign.
Well, thank you, Hunter. The best way to become engaged is to begin following us on Facebook and go to our website. You can sign up to become a volunteer and support this effort. Or you can pop by our campaign office. We call it the Conversation Cottage. It's at 478 2nd Street, right in the heart of downtown Excelsior. And we are open 7 days a week. We have a wonderful staff and volunteers that are always there if you want a sign or a T-shirt or magnets or want to get involved in phone banking or door knocking or spending time with our wonderful family of volunteers. We have over 1,000 people active every day doing the wonderful work of this campaign. And I invite everybody, whoever's listening, friends, family, Democrats, Republicans, Independents, everybody in between, to come along. And that's why my slogan is everyone's invited.
Now, before we go, I just want to tell you a story. I know that you have an interest in antique liquor bottles. And
yes.
My house is recognized by the Chaska Historical Society because it was once the Last Chance Saloon. And Jesse James used to visit the saloon. So when they closed the saloon, they threw all of the stuff in the backyard and lit it on fire. So we've dug up parts of the backyard and have found a ton of these old 1800s liquor bottles. So I have them at my house, and I know you have a collection of those too. So I thought you might be interested in that.
Oh, Hunter, yeah, we've got to get together, my friend. I've spent one of my hobbies amongst many has been going on digs to archaeological digs and finding some of those treasures that lay in the ground, and it tells wonderful stories about our area's history. So I would love to share that sometime.
Yeah, maybe if you want to come to one of our Chaska Indivisible meetings before the election, we could arrange that.
Well, let's absolutely do that. I love those invitations, and if you just let me know when, I'll do my very best to be there and look forward to seeing you soon.
Awesome. Well, thanks for speaking with us today, Dean.
Thank you, Hunter. I'm grateful for the opportunity and so grateful to everybody who's participating in ensuring that change comes on November 6th.
Awesome. Dean Phillips is running for Congress in CD3. That is the district our station is in and the district I live in. He's running against Eric Paulson. And when we come back, we will be speaking with Matt Chrisman of Chapo Trap House. They have a new book, Chapo Guide to Revolution, a manifesto against logic, facts, and reason. So we'll be right back.
This is Pat with PJW Automotive in New Brighton. I've been in business long enough to know that if you want to stand out, you better be the best. That's why I've assembled a top-notch team of automotive specialists who do the job right the first time. Bringing your car or truck to PJW Automotive is an investment in the future of your vehicle. Try us once and you'll see it's worth the drive to PJW Automotive. One exit north of 694 on 35W and online at pjwauto.com.
Hi, Minnesota. Norman Goldman here. Join me every weekday from 5 to 8 p.m. for some clarity, wit, and wisdom on the latest issues of the day here on AM 950. Today on the show, Michael Cohen appears to be eager to cooperate. There's news about his cooperating with New York State authorities. When is the cooperation with Mueller going to hit? Do join me for 3 live hours of the Norman Goldman Show every weeknight here from 5 to 8 on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
It's summertime and the neighborhood is full of activity. Blue Sky Services offers power washing and soft washing for home siding, composite decks, walkways, roofs, and more. They will have your home sparkling like new without damaging your exterior, landscape, or yard. Call 651-447-4484 to take advantage of the final sale before the fall, this month only. Get an early start with Blue Sky's August sale prices and keep your house looking healthy while adding value to your home. Call 651-447-4484. That's Blue Sky Services at 651-447-4484.
Kirk Duckwall and Chad Vandelot with Bricks Real Estate bring you the House Geeks Real Estate Show, Sundays starting at noon here on AM 950. Each week, the House Geeks will discuss the latest in the Twin Cities real estate market, along with bringing you great guests covering everything from plumbing to gardening. You can also check them out online anytime at housegeeks.com. The House Geeks, the smarter way to buy and sell homes.
Enjoy a delicious home-cooked breakfast or lunch away from the kitchen at Milda's Cafe, now open 7 days a week. Milda's Cafe has been cooking up family favorites since 1964. Grab a coffee and sit down for a delicious Philly scramble, house-made rolls, or Denver omelet. Stop in for lunch where you'll find authentic Finnish pasties every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Open weekdays 6 to 3, weekends 8 to 2. Milda's Cafe on Glenwood Avenue, 4 blocks east of Penn.
Hello, friends. I've been talking to you about Prairie Oaks Memorial Eco Gardens, Minnesota's first green cemetery dedicated to celebrating life and protecting our environment. One of the many wonderful things they have is something called the Living Urn. Ashes are buried in an urn with seedlings, ultimately coming back to life as a glorious tree. Isn't that a beautiful thing? Why don't you log on to the website, mngreengraves.com. Learn more about Prairie Oaks Memorial Eco Gardens. See if it might be something that's meaningful for you.
Welcome back to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I'm Hunter Haas with Eric Nelson. And today we have a special guest. Matt Chrisman of the Chapo Trap House podcast has a new book coming out, The Chapo Guide to Revolution, a manifesto against logic, facts, and reason. Hi, Matt.
Hi, guys.
We're here in Minnesota. You're out in New York. But you grew up in the Midwest, correct? You're from Wisconsin. Why don't you tell us about that and how that affected your political consciousness growing up?
Yes, I grew up in Wisconsin, Manitowoc, on the shore of Lake Michigan, about an hour and a half north of Milwaukee, in a sort of a mini Rust Belt town that basically saw its industrial base sort of dry up while I was a kid. And yeah, I mean, I didn't really grow up in a politicized household or in a political town. I mean, it was sort of a downwardly mobile, sort of reactionary white enclave. But I always kind of responded imaginatively to the progressive history of Wisconsin. I don't remember when I found out about like Bob La Follette, but I remember when I did. It sort of gave me sort of a connection to the area as a place where people had, at one point anyway, had sort of a grander vision for what society could look like, and that's sort of stuck with me since then.
Now, your show, Chapo Trap House, is wildly popular, a very vocal voice for the American left movement. Why don't you tell us about how the show came together and what you guys do?
Well, it started off in early 2016 with two friends of mine, Felix Biederman and Will Menneker, who I had at that point never met in person. We just knew each other from the internet. We appeared as guests on another friend of ours from the internet who has a great community radio station and community radio show and podcast in Columbus, Ohio. Street Fight Radio with Brett and Brian. And we went on to talk about the Michael Bay film, 18 Hours or whatever it was. The one about Benghazi? 13 Hours.
Yeah.
And it was a big hit. A lot of people responded really positively to it. So we decided that we should try to do something ourselves. And our first few episodes were just us talking via a Google Hangout and just ripping the audio directly to SoundCloud without even editing it, because none of us had any of those abilities and still don't, I might add. And it just got a really strong response right off the gate, because we were sort of one of the very few media products that kind of gave a consistently pro left perspective on specifically the, at that point, still raging Democratic presidential primary. And it just sort of snowballed from there, and we eventually got Brendan James, our first producer, who gave us sort of a professional sound, a lot of editing, adding and removing things, making it sound like we weren't yelling through tin cans of string. And then eventually I moved to New York from where I had been living in Cincinnati, so that we would all be in one place, and now it sounds relatively professional, although, of course, not that professional.
Well, I've got good news for you, Matt. AM radio in general is going to bring back some of that nostalgia for the tin can on a string sound.
Yeah, people say that whenever I'm calling into a different podcast to a radio station, people always say that they miss that. They miss me hollering into the tin can.
Yeah, there's a certain amount of appeal to like a man sounding like he's screaming from next door.
Yeah.
Now, so the book was a collective effort. You now have five hosts, and why don't you tell us how you went about splitting up the book, and tell us about a bit what it's about.
Well, it's weird, because we have five hosts now, and we have a new producer now, Chris Wade, who has produced us since late last year. But the writers of the book are me, Will, Felix, and also Virgil Texas, who came on after the 2016 presidential election, and then our original producer, Brendan James. Amber Ellie Frost, who also came on as a host after the election, she did not write on the book. She was very busy. She had an actual job at that point. She was working at NYU, and she had other commitments. So it was us kind of last year, spring or summer and fall of last year, basically huddling together to try to put this thing into shape. Some of it was stuff that people had very specific visions of, like, for example, our culture chapter towards the end of the book. It's more unique sort of essays with specific voices. But for a lot of the content, we would just kind of spitball things. We would sit together at a desk, and we would kind of hash out where what we thought about certain subjects and sort of write down the notes as we were talking about them, and one or the other of us would sort of take those sort of scattered insights and shape it into a narrative.
Interesting. And how do you find, I mean, is it weird to go from the, I guess, medium of Twitter is what you're going to get popularized by, and putting it into all of a sudden, you know, chapters and essays for a book?
Oh, yeah. No, it's a huge bummer. And I understand a lot of people, when we announced the book, were very cynical, and they assumed that it was just going to be a collection of tweets. And, yeah. I mean, my God, if we could have gotten away with that. That would have
point.
Actually, writing things is a huge, it's just a lot of work.
Yeah.
I mean, 160 or 280 characters. I mean, that's really where it's at in terms of low energy, low effort commitment. But I think that even if it was harder to do, I feel like we also found it was a lot more rewarding because we got to really elaborate on a lot of ideas that we've only been able to sort of hint at either on the radio or on the podcast or in Twitter. So I feel like if difficult, certainly it's more creatively engaging, and I hope that people who read it will be able to get more out of it than maybe we're ever able to suggest in more ephemeral mediums.
Now, did you consider like an Eric Garner like 1,000-part tweet for this book instead?
apparently, he's not the only one doing that. Apparently, Seth Abramson, another Resistance guy, is going to do a book which is called Threads. It's a collection of his Twitter threads.
Oh, great.
Yeah, maybe someday. Maybe it's just as a cynical cash grab.
Okay, sure. Tweet.
But for now, I feel like we want to show that we're actually, you know, we want to put the work in, and we want to kind of convey a more coherent message to people.
Yeah.
Now, the title, A Manifesto Against Logic, Facts, and Reason, is this a call out to the intellectual dark web of Ben Shapiro's and Jordan Peterson's?
Yeah, exactly. That's the idea. Is that this really incredibly boring, stultifying, right-wing, intellectual narrative is just really begging for some sort of pushback, and I mean we don't really take it to the extreme. We're not it's not Dadaist or anything, but we're explicitly saying that like the parameters of what you've been told by these tedious little wads constitutes a reasoned debate or the limits of acceptable opinion. That's all fraud. And, we're trying to sort of undermine that.
Now, what are some of the chapters that you specifically focused on the most?
I did most of my work, because it's divided into, it's called A Chapel Guide to Revolution, but that's mostly ironic. We don't really have a lot of prescriptive elements in the book. It's really more of, annoyingly, if Hillary Clinton had not stolen What Happened as a title, it would be really appropriate for this book, because this book really is more, to people who find themselves horrified by the current state of neoliberal savagery and the just daily awfulness of the Trump administration and the absolute feckless and incompetent opposition of the Democrats, they often might wonder, well, what happened? How did we get here? And the book really is more about focusing on the specific things that have led us to that moment. So we have a book that's sort of a world overview of foreign policy since World War II. It's a focus on American imperialism. We've got a chapter on the media and its evolution. We have a chapter on work, the reality of work and sort of the fantasies and propaganda that people are told about working. Culture, which I mentioned, is sort of all of us getting onto our specific hobby horses on general issues of the cultural firmament. And then the ones that I worked most intensely on personally were chapters on conservative movement and liberals, basically throughout American history, specifically in the last 30 years, since the neoliberal turn sort of demolished the traditional sort of economic differences between the parties and created this weird culture war with these two sort of broadly neoliberal parties arrayed against each other. And then so we talk about them, the conservatism and liberalism both as ruling ideologies and as sort of grassroots belief systems of regular Americans.
Now, why don't you talk about, because you brought up liberalism, neoliberalism. I think people get confused about this, and especially older people. You see a lot of criticism.
Which is everyone who listens to it.
Yeah, we've got quite a bit of an older audience here. People get confused on that, like calling out liberals. And what do we call this? Like there's progressive, there's democratic socialist. How do we navigate these waters of these labels for the left?
You know, it's tough, and I mean, it's especially tough because branding is such an overpowering element of American political culture. I think that liberalism, I think, needs to be broadly understood as this. If you want to be charitable, you could call it well-meaning or not. Attempt to ameliorate the worst effects of capitalism, but maintain capitalism as sort of the unchallengeable economic engine of society. And I think that the rising challenge to that is coming from people like myself and my co-writers and co-hosts who want to transcend capitalism, who think that not only can we do better than capitalism for the future of humanity and the planet, we must. And I think that's really the dividing line that's going to become more and more salient in the coming years. And in terms of the labels for it, I think are less important than what people are proposing to actually do about it.
When we come back, we'll hear part two of our interview with Matt Chrisman of the Chapo Trap House podcast and his new book, The Chapo Guide to Revolution, a manifesto against logic, facts, and reason. Available in bookstores everywhere. We'll be right back.
This is Chad, owner of AM950, here to tell you about Snap Construction. They're experts in roofing, siding, window, and insurance restoration. They have energy-efficient products available for both residential and commercial properties. This spring, when we needed a company to take a look at a problem with our roof, I called the company I knew I could trust, Snap Construction. I've known Ryan, the owner at Snap Construction, for years, so I knew I could trust him. Don't just take my word for it. Check out their reviews online. They are arguably the most well-reviewed exterior contractor online in the metro area. Over the years, Ryan has always said the same thing to me about his work. If we build it, shouldn't we be held accountable for the work indefinitely? He backed that statement up years ago when Snap Construction was a pioneer in offering a lifetime craftsmanship guarantee on all their work. For a free estimate or general questions, call the locally owned company AM950 Trusts Snap Construction at 612-333-SNAP. That's 612-333-SNAP, or find them online at snapconstruction.com. They have financing options available.
Stages Theater Company is dedicated to creating a space where diverse opinions, courageous dialogue, and community engagement is not only valued, but vital to our shared artistic and educational success. Stages Theater Company creates a welcoming home for all. For over 30 years, Stages has supported quality theater programming for children. Stages gives opportunities for youth to be on stage, backstage, in the audience, and in the classroom. Whether you come to see a show, enroll a young person in a workshop, or benefit from their outreach programs in the community, Stages brings art to life. Learn about Stages Theater by going to stagestheater.org and become part of the magic of live theater by taking your family to an amazing show or enrolling someone you love in an education program. Stages Theater Company operates out of the Hopkins Center for the Arts, located in Main Street in the heart of downtown Hopkins. For more information on Stages Theater, go to stagestheater.org. That's stagestheater.org.
Minnesota is home to the only major institution in North America devoted to Russian art, history, and culture. The Museum of Russian Art, located off 35W on Diamond Lake Road in South Minneapolis, can be your personal connection to extraordinary artists, stories, and context. We offer more exhibitions and events than ever before, from concerts and lectures to vodka tastings and more. Open daily, free parking, and a great Groupon deal. Find out more at tmora.org.
Welcome back to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I'm Hunter Haas with Eric Nelson, and we are sitting down with Matt Chrisman of Chapo Trap House to promote their new book, The Chapo Guide to Revolution, a manifesto against logic, facts, and reason. Your show, Chapo Trap House, has become wildly popular. It's consistently the number one Patreon, and you guys criticize the Democrats and Republicans equally when they're opposed to progressive causes. Why do you think that touched such a nerve and became so popular?
I think it's honestly because there wasn't really that voice anywhere else in media. I mean, there is sort of a broadly agreed upon liberalism in media, which is one of the things that drives conservatives so crazy, is because they see nothing but liberalism on television and in films. But it is a very narrow neoliberally infused liberalism that sort of refuses to move beyond sort of these very stale concepts of what constitutes realistic political change and like what politics can be. And the conservatives have this entire alternative media structure that they can turn to, from Fox News to a million radio shows and stuff, to sort of, and books to sort of exist outside of that liberal hegemony culturally. Whereas if you are disenchanted from the left of that liberal consensus, there really wasn't a lot of, there weren't a lot of places for you to go when our show started. And amazingly, it's still the case. And I think that is largely responsible for the rise of the show, is just that we became sort of a focal point for dissatisfaction with the options as presented, and a desire to have sort of a consistent left critique, as opposed to sort of a cynical throwing up of the hands or the embrace of the sort of logic nerd crypto fascism of the intellectual dark web.
Yeah, and you really don't see on the left as many of these figureheads like the Ben Shapiro's, the Jordan Peterson's. Who are some of your favorite left-wing media sources that you turn to?
I mean, that's the thing, is that it is very asymmetrical, because there aren't characters with this sort of media platform as a guy like a Shapiro. And so the people who I like are still really very much on the fringes comparably, like Street Fight, like I said, or Citations Needed, or Champagne Sharks, or any number of much smaller podcasts. There really isn't a left-wing face in mainstream media that can be really pointed to as somebody who's going to consistently express the sort of point of view that we're trying to see replicated in the culture. It really is still, even though it's getting more prevalent and the voices calling for it are getting stronger, and you're seeing more and more of traditional political campaigns being inflected with it, the response by media at large is still sort of a bafflement or terror, because of the lack of people who articulate that vision anywhere in it.
Now, I saw an article recently that the mainstream right-wing news, they are struggling right now on taking on these more progressive candidates like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, because for such a long time they built it on attacking neoliberal Democrats that were for things like tax incentives. We're now the policies brought forward are health care for all, free college for 2 years, very popular things that when they put them on blast, people go, well, that sounds good to me. What do you feel about that?
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly what's happening. Is that conservatives have absolutely been feasting on an opponent that is essentially not putting up a real fight, because the structure of the Democratic Party is such that it is fundamentally incapable of offering solutions to problems that people face day to day that would actually be effective and popular, because that would upset their donor base. I mean, healthcare is obviously a huge example, and it's very illustrative, because you have a party that is as beholden to the insurance industry and healthcare as a business as the Republicans are, and is therefore as committed to preserving the parasitic role of insurance and providers that the Republicans are. And so their solutions to healthcare injustice and healthcare troubles that millions and millions of Americans suffer from is things like Obamacare, these Jenga towers of regulation and subsidy that are both ineffective in a lot of ways and very confusing and unengaging to people. And that makes it easy for Republicans to turn that into anything. They can turn something like Obamacare into a boogeyman, because nobody really knows what it is. Something like Medicare for All, the idea of taking insurers out of the picture completely, having the government be the payer for all coverage for all medical needs, free at the point of use, is something that everyone can get their head around very easily and can be shown very easily how it would drastically improve their lives. And that puts the Republicans at a real back-footed position for the first time in my lifetime, because how do you argue against that without basically saying, well, think of the insurance companies? And I think most people hate their insurance company and have no desire to see them preserved in the system if it's not necessary. And that's why they're sputtering so much, and that's why they're just shrieking Venezuela at the top of their lungs.
Now, I've said that the litmus test for these 2018 midterms for progressive candidates is being for single-payer health care. But I believe in 2020, our litmus test needs to be a state and federal jobs and housing guarantee. What do you think, do you personally look for in progressive candidates? What is your bare minimum that they need to meet?
I think those are all good starts. I honestly think that for me, it comes down to whether or not they're willing to seriously support to the point of proposing and voting for things that decommodify crucial components of American economic life, such as healthcare, such as housing, things that remove this rapacious, capitalist, parasitic relationship that is immiserating millions of Americans and more every day. And because those sort of proposals, as I said, are not digestible by the Democratic Party as it currently exists. So the degree to which a candidate is serious about creating an alternative structure and a new sort of politics based on appealing to voters as opposed to appealing to voters is the degree to which they're willing to propose and support things that are absolutely not acceptable to that donor base that has dictated the Democratic Party for the last generation.
Something that concerns me, I see this leftward movement in America, but then I see also Democrats that have short-term memories. Like I saw a poll that more than half of Democrats have a favorable opinion of George W. Bush now because of Trump.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. Oh, don't you wish he was just back in office?
It's George W. Bush actually accomplished things that made our lives worse. Trump is kind of just a babbling buffoon that doesn't get things done, but George W. Bush got things done. And I don't know. What are your feelings on that? I worry when I see stuff like that.
Oh, no. But the thing is, the people who respond like that are just liberals. They're people who are, for the most part, economically secure and who, for the most part, are opposed to Trump on aesthetic grounds. They don't like his manner. They don't like what he does to norms. They don't like what he does to what they imagine America to be in their heads, as opposed to what he does to the material lives of American citizens. And I think that's going to be an obstacle to the degree that people still believe that the key to victory in the future, electorally, to the extent that that can be viable path, is through traditional Democratic voters. And I think that that is about half true. And I think that that half number is a good example, is a good demonstration of just how many Democrats are not really comfortable with the left, don't want to move left, and are either going to have to be dragged that way made into hostages to a left party with a significantly farther left center of gravity than they are comfortable with, which has been the case for leftists who felt compelled to vote for Democrats for generations now, or they will have to be sort of left behind because if there is an electoral future for the left in this country, it involves engaging the masses of people who are disillusioned with America's politics, don't think America was already great, and who have kind of despaired for there being an electoral solution to the problems of their lives, and who can perhaps be convinced that that's not the case. But that will only happen if the proposals at play and the grassroots effort being mobilized is one that is defiantly opposed to those old Democratic norms and expectations that those kind of people who are hearkening back to fondly to George W. Bush represent.
Now, leftists in general around the world are very good at bickering with each other and splitting off and splintering. What do you see as the best ways to find solidarity on the left?
Oh, man, if I knew, I'd let you know.
That's a million dollar question.
That is a significant issue. I honestly think that it is, in America specifically, is one of the place I know the most about. It really is, I think, a symptom more than anything, a powerlessness of when you have so little at stake in terms of your ability to actually affect change, small differences and small conflicts become overpowering because the absence of any greater mission, greater effort, greater possible success that banding together might create. And so to me, the best thing to create solidarity is just success. Honestly, it's demonstrating effectiveness and making it look like taking a particular path will be fruitful. And if that's the case, I think a lot of that fractiousness becomes less prevalent. I mean, it'll never be gone. It'll never go away. There will always be those people. But I think more and more people will be willing to give a shot to that which looks like it might be effective. And I feel like we're at this inflection point now where you're seeing popular successes, you're seeing electoral efforts reaching people, you're seeing a sort of a cultural shift, but it's still very, very nascent. And I think that gives some people the idea that we are at a point sort of where these sort of ideological fractures must be dealt with, when in reality, we're still very, very early. But I feel like once we get past this sort of Gladwellian tipping point, I think the momentum is going to take care of a lot of that, ideally, hopefully, inshallah.
Yeah, hopefully. But I heard some rumblings that you could be taking the podcast on the road and here to Minnesota. Do you have any details on that, or are the rumors true?
Yes, I can. I don't have the dates in front of me. I'm not sure if we've officially confirmed with the venue yet, but we are doing a Midwest tour in October.
Awesome.
From Pittsburgh to Minneapolis and points in between. So I can say that, yes, in mid-October, keep your eyes open. We will be announcing a date in Minneapolis.
Awesome. Very excited for that. We're speaking with Matt Chrisman of the Chapo Trap House and their new book, The Chapo Guide to Revolution, A Manifesto Against Logic, Facts, and Reason, is available now. Matt, why don't you tell our listeners the best place to buy the book?
I would say your local independent bookstore. Or an independent vendor like Howells.com if you want to use the internet.
All right.
Yeah, avoid Amazon like the plague.
Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
All right. Well, Matt, thanks for chatting with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
All right. That was our interview with Matt Chrisman of Chapo Trap House. It was really an honor to speak with him. Me and Eric are both huge fans of their podcast. I recommend you all check it out. And we'll be back after this on Local Minnesota Radio Hour on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
At Pride Institute, being LGBTQ+ is the norm, not the exception. Their highly trained and skilled staff understand your issues and will help you live a happy, healthy life as a proud LGBTQ+ person. They offer you hope to overcome your addiction and live the life you want. Their treatment programs are designed to assist you in developing the knowledge, skills, and attitudes for long-term recovery. Therapy groups include health education, LGBTQ issues, HIV and chronic illness, trauma, grief and loss, transgender support, nicotine recovery, education, and sexual health. Pride Institute offers a residential treatment program, a partial hospitalization program that includes day programming with lodging, and an intensive outpatient program. If you or someone in your life can benefit from guidance and coping skills, life balance, and other tools necessary for long-term recovery, check them out at pride-institute.com or call 800-547-7433 now.
Seward Co-op, serving the community for nearly 45 years, invites you to shop their two convenient locations, both offering the strong commitment to local producers and healthy foods you've come to expect. Seward focuses on locally grown and raised products, fair trade, and environmental sustainability. Shop their selection of meats, artisan cheeses, and house-made baked goods. Find Seward at 2823 East Franklin Avenue or the Friendship Store on 38th Street and 3rd Avenue in Minneapolis. More at seward.coop.
Atheists Talk is the radio show for free-thinking Minnesotans. Listen on Sunday mornings at 9 o'clock. Every Sunday, we bring you science, philosophy, politics, and plain old fun from an atheist's point of view. visit our website at minnesotaatheists.org for more details. Tune in to Atheists Talk Radio Sunday mornings at 9 o'clock on KTNF AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's good radio without the good book.
Brending Electrolysis on Grand Avenue in St. Paul has been a leader in permanent hair removal for people of all skin types and backgrounds for over 30 years, celebrating diversity and priding themselves on finding the right treatment plan for each client's individual needs, regardless of race or gender. Services include electrolysis, body waxing, facials, microneedling, and permanent makeup. Book your 60-minute complimentary consultation, including a 15-minute treatment today, for beautiful, lasting results. Visit BrendingElectrolysis.com.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. This is Hunter Haas with Eric Nelson, hosting local Minnesota Radio Hour. A special thanks to both of our guests, Dean Phillips and Matt Chrisman. I'm a big fan of both of you. And Eric, do you have any plans to go to the state fair anytime soon?
You know, I didn't know it was even going on.
It starts already. Today.
Is it today?
It's today is the first day.
I love the fair. I hope I don't miss it this year.
What's your favorite thing at the fair?
Oh, just probably washing people.
Oh, yeah, that's a good answer.
My favorite, like, thing I can buy? I don't know. It's got to be the deep-fried Snicker bars.
Yeah, I like that, but yeah, you feel sick afterwards.
No,
my favorite is the turkey sandwich. The fried turkey.
Oh, my God.
No, the fried turkey. It's really good. You can only get it there.
Fried turkey.
Yeah, big fan of the turkey sandwich. I'll be there actually on Saturday producing I'm Awake Live at 2 p.m. So shout out to the I'm Awake people. Robert
Pilot.
That'll
be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Robert Pilot hosted Matt McNeil this week on Monday and Tuesday. Did a great job. And I'll be seeing the Native Pride Dancers. They're starting their show at 2, I'm Awake, and then at 3 is the Native Pride Dancers. So if you're at the fair on Saturday, come hang out with us. But I'm Hunter Haas with Eric Nelson on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. We'll see you later.
Bye, guys.